This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 170. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on 0208 816 7691. And you can email us on coach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway. Mark, you're live on the scene this week. I can already hear the cricket going on in the background. Where are you?
We're at Tunbridge School, a cricket festival. We're playing Bishop's School from Cape Town, a very famous cricket school, with Herschel Gibbs being one of the old boys, and Craig Kiswitter, before he came over to Millfield School, was also there as well. So they're steeped in cricket history, and we're playing them in a festival today. Yeah, so it's all good.
And is that going on all week? Is that keeping you busy?
We've got 3 days. So this is the first day of it. Tomorrow we play against a combined academy side from Australia, from Western Australia. And then on Thursday we play against Tunbridge School on the last day.
So what's that like for the players, having that much cricket in such a short period of time?
I think to be honest, we've had such a big schedule the last few weeks because with the national cup competition all being sort of put into the last few days of the term, they're very much used to having lots of cricket and lots of days. We've got 13 with us, so we can move things around. We've also got heaps of bowlers, which is massively important to have. So we can swap those around. We've got 9 bowlers in our team, so we won't have too much problem. We won't have to over bowl anybody, which is good. It's just a great opportunity to play some cricket against some overseas teams, and every overseas team brings a slightly different challenge than you get when you're playing against England schools. So we're very much looking forward to it.
Yeah, when you're young as well, you never want to stop playing cricket, do you? You don't think about fatigue or looking after yourself. You just want to get back on the park the next day, don't you? So.
No, absolutely. And as long as you're from a bowling load point of view, which we can manage because we've got 5 seamers that we can rotate. So that's not too much of a problem. For them to play, and to be fair, we're probably going to get a bit of rain at some point this week. So, it won't be a full programme. It will probably be broken up a little bit. It's just good to be playing cricket because we've missed so much.
Yeah, and speaking of younger listeners, we've had some emails in this week from a couple of our younger listeners. We've got a question coming up in the question section from someone who's just 11 years old. So I thought we'd recognise that there are people who listen to this who are just starting out in the game and still working out what to do and how to do it. And it's just as important to talk to the 11-year-old as it is to talk to the 40-year-old.
More important in many ways.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we try and keep it as broad a church as possible. We've got a lot of people who listen to this from lots of different areas of cricket. But yeah, if you're 10 and you're listening to this, welcome. If you're 20 and you're listening to this, welcome. And if you're 50 and a coach and listening to this, maybe you're 50 and still playing. I played cricket last night against a chap who's well into his 60s.
Yeah, and, good.
And still turning out midweek cricket, turning out on every Saturday for the first 11, and still a pretty good wicketkeeper as well. So he's not picked the easiest task to be getting on a bit and doing it, but he still loves it.
Oh, it's good to see. My granddad played until he was well into his 60s, and the old man still tries to play at 67. Good on him, I reckon. Good on him.
Try has been the operating word there, is it?
Yeah. With him, it is definitely try. I think he probably lost his ability to be a big player in the team when he was about, and to be fair, 50. He was still playing decent cricket at 50, but after that, I think he's more enjoying bringing on a number of youngsters and giving them a bit of advice and being the person at the other end, giving them that bit of advice rather than actually doing the stuff himself.
It's actually very hard to retire in amateur cricket because you always get that phone call, don't you? we're three short in the third 11. Can you, what are you doing this afternoon?
I keep getting... keep getting the call now, and I'm not quite reached that those dizzy ages yet, but I keep getting the call now, and so far I've been able to keep saying no because I've had other commitments, but we'll have to see. If the sun starts coming out, I might be a bit more interested.
That's that very definition of being a fair weather cricketer now.
Correct. I've done enough standing in the rain out in the field. Thank you very much.
We've been doing a bit of field setting stuff on the website this week, and one of the things I was researching when I was looking into some field settings was field settings by MS Dhoni, and pretty much across the board I couldn't find anyone who was saying anything except, God, he's so defensive in Test cricket, it's really bad, you know, he should have more attacking fielders, he just tends to sit back and wait for things to happen. Is this a shortcoming of Dhoni, or is this a legitimate tactic in Test cricket these days to sit back?
Well, I think it is a legitimate tactic, and probably we started it, to be honest with you. When we put fielders out for Hayden and Langer at the beginning of the Ashes series in 2005, having a deep point to Justin Langer to cut off those boundaries to stop his innings from getting off to such a flyer. So that was massively important for us. But we still retained the catches whilst doing that. And I think where Dhoni's gone with it, he's looked at his bowling attack, and particularly in some conditions around the world, his bowling attack do lack the edge, you know, particularly in the seam attack. A lot of pressure was on Zahir Khan to knock people over, and as his body's got older, he's become better at holding on to longer spells, but his penetration's gone downhill as well, so that's the problem that he's had. So I can see why he's a bit more defensive now, which is understandable, but also the key to Test match cricket is getting 20 wickets, because very rarely do you win games of Test match cricket without getting the 20 wickets. So I thought the balance that Michael Vaughan got in 2005 was a good one, with having the main boundary area being blocked off and then still attacking in the other areas to try and pick up those 20 wickets, and it worked very well for us.
Yeah, I mean, he wouldn't face as much criticism if he set sort of two slips in a gully and, you know, carried on as is tradition. But, you know, that I think maybe that's a bit more thoughtless, or not thoughtless, but not as mindful as thinking about it and coming up with a plan and saying to yourself, okay, all right, I'm only going to have one slip, or maybe I won't have a slip at all. But there's a reason for that. Whereas, you know, I think a lot of people, you see it at low levels all the time. They set a ring field, two slips in the gully early on, and they pop out, and you know, after a few overs, and that's that. You know, so there's no real sort of looking at the fielders and looking at the batsmen and deciding what to do. So I don't really know what to think, because the criticism has been so strong of Dhoni, but I think maybe he's being an easy. It's an easy target to say he's not an attacking bat captain because he's not setting attacking fields.
Well, but his bowling attack is quite limited, isn't it? Let's be brutally honest. You know, in the space of a few years, they've lost Cumblay, who was obviously very, very good, and Zahir Khan can't bowl with the intensity that he's had, you know, at the best part of his career. So you look at somebody like Ishant Sharma burst onto the scene, that hasn't been able to hold his ability to take wickets. He's become more of a stop bowler now. Praveen Kumar is a good bowler in English conditions, but around the world will struggle when the ball's not swinging around as much as it does over here. So it's quite a limited bowling attack, and you know, if he was to over-attack or to attack to the same level that, say, Andrew Strauss can do now with his bowling attack, then I should imagine that oppositions would be quite happy with that, because you'd have a great opportunity to score and score quickly. So yeah, that's what I would say. I think he's limited by his attack to a certain extent. But yeah, could he keep another capture in? I think that's a challenge that both him and Fletch will be talking about.
We are big fans of academy setups, Pitch Vision Academy, both online ones like our own and, of course, real life ones like the Ace Cricket Academy in Perth in Western Australia. And I'm joined on the line now by Ian Thacker, who is Academy Director for Ace Cricket Coaching. Hi. How's it going, Ian?
Couldn't be better, thanks. I could do with some Perth sunshine, but apart from that, we're doing fine.
You're in the UK at the moment.
I am, yes, meeting with a number of lads that are looking to come out to Perth for the English winter. Yeah.
So tell us a bit about how ACE works.
Well, we're tied in very, very closely. In fact, we're in partnership with the University of Western Australia, and all that brings with the sports science technology and all the facilities at the university in Perth. But we have lads from all over the world, mainly from the UK, but we've had South African lads, Indian, Pakistan guys, and we've got a lad coming from Canada this year. And we look after lads for anything from 4 weeks up to 20 weeks, and they come and play out in Australia, and we coach them on a daily basis. We work, basically, from 9 till 5, 5 days a week, and then they play at the weekend.
And these are all sort of budding professionals, or people who are just starting
Right across the range. We're interested in attitude, really. We have very few lads who invest in themselves with time and money and come out and haven't got a fantastic attitude. So they come out, they work hard. We don't really mind if the lads who are looking to get from a club third team into the second team, or whether or not they're looking to move on and play first-class cricket. We've had a number of lads who have gone on to play first-class cricket, and that's absolutely thrilled us. But the biggest thrill that we get is when you get a lad who's not got as much ability, he comes back to the UK, probably plays Premier League first team or gets into the second team. We had a lad the other day who's not the world's greatest batsman, got a Premier League 100. Absolutely thrilled. And we get a big kick out of that, yeah.
What kind of things are covered when someone comes along to the academy?
Well, obviously the basic skills of batting, bowling and fielding, we work very, very hard on those. But we cover far more than that. We have on board, arguably, the most sought-after cricket sports psychologist in the world in Sandy Gordon. And Sandy works very closely on mental toughness and the psychological side of cricket with the guys. Fitness is a huge part of the academy. We've got a strength and conditioning coach who's tied in with the university and is quite well known in the UK. And I think he's known to you pitch vision guys quite well, Lawrence Houghton. And Lawrence works with the guys, cricket-specific fitness. Ted Hussey, you might have heard a chap called Mike Hussey and Dave Hussey.
Yeah.
Their old man, he's quite a character. He's a sprint coach, and he works on running techniques with the guys, and particularly with the bowlers, gets them running in properly. So we cover the whole spectrum, everything cricket-related that you could possibly wish to do. And the other thing that we do also do is try and prepare guys. They're away from home, they're a long way from the UK or wherever they live, and we try to prepare them for other parts of their lives as well, and possibly for university in the future. And we have all sorts of motivational speakers and all sorts of things happening for them. Yeah.
And you have access to excellent facilities as well, including Pitch Vision, because I know that Lawrence, yeah, who has done a lot with us at Pitch Vision Academy, is also an expert at using Pitch Vision. So how does that fit into the Academy programme?
Well, I'm glad Lawrence is the expert. He's the technological superstar with us. He uses Pitch Vision a lot. We use it probably on a daily basis. And what we will do is we do a lot of one-to-ones morning and early afternoon with the guys. And there's three coaches, Stewie Walters, who's down at Glamorgan, Mike Rindell, who played for South Africa, now lives in Perth, myself, and we've got one or two other guest batting coaches come in. We work one-to-one with the guys. Lawrence takes probably a couple of lads and works with his BATEX system and works with the Pitch Vision system and on a daily basis on some of the other nets. So it's in constant use. It's invaluable to us. And the lads love getting the feedback. By the time they get back to the apartment at night, they can download all the feedback on the computers, and Lawrence has got it all ready for them. So it's a fantastic tool for us.
What kind of level of improvement do you see in the players who are arriving? I mean, obviously there's a difference in standards, but how, on average, how much do you see someone improve over the course of the time that they're with you?
Difficult to quantify that. Obviously the guys that come out who are not as able cricketers as one or two, you see a huge difference. I can think of a young man in Scotland who came out and was very ordinary. And when he went back, you just couldn't recognise him as the same cricketer. That was great to see. But with some of the guys who are playing County 19s, County Second 11, it's just a minute little difference, just one or two possibly technical advances. But a lot is to do with what happens between the ears, and they come back thinking very differently about the game and about their own game and how to prepare the mental toughness, and that is when you see the more elite cricketers really kick on. So it's difficult to put quantify it, but most lads come back fairly different cricketers to what they come out, to what when they came out.
Apart from pitch vision, which we already know is cutting edge stuff, what other unique methods do you utilise when someone comes to?
I'm not so sure that we've got anything unique. One thing that we do have in Perth, and particularly this summer in England, is we just have the most fantastic climate. The facilities that we have out at the university really are genuinely first-class facilities. And the number of turf nets that we use on a daily basis, the centre wicket practices. But we also use the outside facilities of Perth. I mean, it's far easier to have a cricket-specific, but a running session right next to the Indian Ocean and have a cool-down in the ocean after, than perhaps going running in England something like this morning. So we use the natural resources as well. I wouldn't say they are unique, but they are possibly unique to Perth.
And the knowledge, I suppose, is the other thing, the experience of producing cricketers in your...
We are fairly blessed. I mean, Bob Massey, who, if anybody's my age, sort of mid-50s, you start to twitch now at the name of Bob Massey, of what he did to England at Lord's on his debut. But Darryl Foster's bowling coach as well. I mean, experience from those two guys is just unbelievable. Mike Rindell played with South Africa for years. Mike's sort of in his mid-40s. They're sort of the older guys with a fantastic knowledge. But we've got a couple of younger guys. So you look at Stewie Walters, and the great beauty with Stewie is he's involved with the modern game, playing the modern game, the T20 and the four-day game. So he's got across, sort of right across all three cricket spectrums, and we can impart all this into the lads and pass it on to them. I think we cover most bases, to be honest.
Well, more than most. I mean, when you think about having someone who's specialising in showing someone how to run, you know, having a sprint coach, you know, that's something that a lot of people won't have experienced.
Well, no, but I'm yet to think of anybody that's come out and said, oh yeah, we've done this before. And it absolutely amazes us the difference it makes with fielding, with running between the wickets, and particularly for the quick bowlers when they're running into bowl. Absolutely amazes that people over here haven't done it before, and it's invaluable. And the other thing is as well, with Ted being the character that he is, it's a heck of a lot of fun as well.
So if someone's listening to this and they're thinking to themselves, you know, I quite fancy that hothouse, that intensity to really rack my standards up, how would they find out more about joining the academy?
We've got a website, obviously. If you were to Google in, these guys are far better at this modern technology than old blokes like me, but if you Google in Ace Cricket or UWA, the University of Western Australia Cricket Academy, and you'll find everything comes through fairly quickly on the internet for you. Just make contact through there. Be delighted to hear from anyone.
Okay, so it's time now for the mailbag, and hopefully, Gareth, you can take yourself away from the cricket for a couple of minutes so we can answer these questions which have been sent in to Pitch Vision Academy, and the best one of these questions wins a prize, which is an online coaching course from pitchvision.com. So head over to pitchvision.com/academy to have a look at those if you're interested in any of those online coaching courses. This week, because we've got no Burners, he's away again, we're going to split it up by me reading the questions and Gareth, if you can answer them to the best of your ability.
I'll do my best, mate.
Both of these are from younger players to celebrate the younger players who often write into us with questions. First is from Bonga from South Africa, and he says, I play for my school under-13 team and I'm 11. I always get out early in my innings. When I stay for the whole innings, I get nothing above 30. I've got a 50-over provincial trial festival in 2 months. How do I get a big score? and how do I be more attacking?
I mean, the most crucial time of the innings is the first 20 balls, and it comes down to concentration a lot of the time, but also knowing your game. And it's massively important when players first go out, instead of batting and letting the ball dictate to them, that they actually know where their scoring areas are, they know where they're going to leave the ball, they know where their boundary options are. And I always find that the people who struggle in the first 20 balls are the people that haven't planned their innings, and that's massively crucial to do. You see people go out there and will almost just play the conditions rather than actually have an idea of how to get off strike, and people get bogged down, and you know they end up being not out off of 15 balls, and then all of a sudden play a big shot to try and get themselves out of a hole and get out for a low score. So it comes, we talk about it all the time, don't we, planning and getting an idea of what you want to do before you walk to a wicket, and doing visualization the night before so you know exactly how you're going to look and what your approach is. And the great thing about playing in places like South Africa is that you've got a good idea what the pitches are going to be like, what the weather's going to be like, so you haven't got those variables that we've had this year, and you can actually plan yourself to get out there and do it. And I just think that try and work out where you're going to get your singles, where you're going to get your fours, what your strengths are, is really, really important, and will help that player in the first 20 balls of an innings. And it doesn't get any more complex to me than that.
I think people do think about it a lot. Some people do anyway. I mean, I think maybe you're slightly blessed if you can not overthink about it, but I think especially batsmen, they do tend to think about it quite a lot. And when you're quite young, you don't really have that much of an idea what you're doing. So I mean, what age can you start to do those things? Can you be doing them when you're 11?
I think you can, because we can have normal conversations, and I often find that coaching young players, you can actually have quite adult conversations with young players, because most of them have been playing some form of cricket, whether it be quick cricket, whether it be tape ball, whatever, where, you know, they've worked out that their pull shot is quite a good shot, or that they can drive very well, and they've worked out that they can knock it over here without necessarily having that huge technical input that some of us have had over the years, just because they're young, they've worked that one out. Hold on a minute, sorry, this isn't actually...
That's got to be a wide, isn't it? Am I wrong in that? Thank you, very good. Sorry, I just had to shout at an umpire, which is Village, but he's just bowled a ball literally 10 foot over the top of the batter's head. The umpire's just said you can't bowl it up there, rather than actually widening it. I do apologise for that. It was
terrible. Can't bowl it up there. Interesting.
So I've just had to shout at him to get his arms out. sorry. Hopefully you can edit that bit out.
Yeah, I might leave it in.
but going back to what I was saying, I think you can have good conversations with 11-year-olds. The other thing that 11-year-olds have had experience of nowadays is actually watching a lot of cricket and watching a lot of cricket on the television, whereas when I grew up in the early years, you only really had the opportunity to watch test matches on the telly on BBC One. Now you've got 2020 coming from all over the world, and they're watching these games and they're picking things up. And I think coaches nowadays need to use the fact that television's on all the time and they're watching loads of cricket to actually facilitate some conversations and say, well, you know, how's Dhoni got off strike? What's Kevin Peterson looking to do in his first few balls of the innings? You know, where's his boundary areas? Those are the sort of conversations that kids will be very quick to pick up on. And I think it's a real challenge for coaches and for parents to do that, because that will build up their understanding of what they then need to do when they first go to a wicket, whether they're playing a 20-20 game or a 50-over game, and certainly helps that first 20 balls, which is all crucial.
Okay, let's move on to the next question. And this is a bit of an epic one. It's almost a full match report. So buckle down. Okay. It's from Abhishek, and he says, who is a regular correspondent.
He is a regular correspondent. You're right.
Recently, after a long break, I went on to play a 2020 game in a league in Indonesia. Our opponents were really strong, so we knew that we would be thrashed. I bowled the 11th over and I got a wicket in the very first ball. I was delighted by the fact that I was rewarded so early in my over without spending a run. But I don't know what happened. The situation backfired on me instead of giving me confidence. I fell under pressure since the expectation was so high. After that first wicket ball, things seemed to not be under my control. I leaked 21 runs after that, including six wides. I just couldn't bowl a dot ball. I wasn't given another chance after that over. I'd bowled well in the practice match before, 2 days before, and I was confident, but I felt I threw it away. On the positive side, the opponents later appreciated I was giving the ball a good amount of flight when they rarely see that in club games, who's a spinner. How do I stay calm when I've been rewarded early in the over and not get pressurised by the expectations?
It's a really good question, actually. I mean, that last bit, the story behind it is interesting to hear his background, but the the bit at the end is, you know, is massive. And I call it milestone management. And it's the same when people get 50s and 100s. You see a lot of people get out for 101, 102. And then you hear Graham Gooch talking about daddy 100s, you know, which are 170s, 200s type scores, and people have to learn to manage milestones, because we can get outside of our bubble once we've got a milestone, whether it's a wicket first ball. We can get outside of our bubble and start doing things that we wouldn't normally do, and getting our mind being less focused than it was when we ran up for that first ball. So, yeah, I think it's a common problem. It's Kevin Peterson, for example, when he used to get hundreds in the early part of his career, would get 100 and then get out because he couldn't manage his milestone. He used to get 158 and get out. Was another common score for him until he learned to manage himself around that. And it's exactly the same as if you're doing badly as if you're doing well. You have to be able to manage yourself by taking deep breaths, taking a bit of time out of a game, slowing the game down, doing what Jonathan Trott does in his routine, and go back into marking your crease as a batter, or standing at the end of your run-up and visualizing your successful ball and how you're going to go about your stuff. But it's going back to the absolute basics of controlling yourself, whether you're doing well by getting a wicket and then having to refocus, or whether you've gone for four and then having to refocus. The process is exactly the same, and people forget that once they've been successful. You know, I've often talked to batters, if we talk from a batting perspective, they'll hit their best shot that they've ever hit and then get out next ball because their mind's still on the best shot that they ever hit rather than concentrating on the next ball. And it's exactly the same as getting a wicket first ball and then being thrown off of your processes. And so, you know, when you get to the end of a mark, you see bowlers collect themselves. I remember that great battle between Atherton and Donald years ago at Trent Bridge, where everybody's beans were going a bit, and there was a bit of adrenaline flying around, and you saw Alan Donald taking lots of deep breaths at the end of his mark, really focusing on what he wanted to do, and placing the ball very particularly in his hand. Well, he could have been doing that if he was on hat-trick ball and he got two wickets and he needed to make this one count, stand at his end of his mark, take some deep breaths, position the ball in the hand very particularly, concentrate on what you're doing, and then come in and bowl. So that it's hugely important that you have processes around what you do, whether you're doing well or whether you're not doing so well.
That that ability to be able to sort of wipe the slate clean almost and start again in the next ball, that's something that we saw in another sport recently in the Wimbledon final, where Roger Federer just seemed to be like a machine. He just, whatever happened, you know, he loses the first set and he still just carries on regardless. You know, that's an amazing power, and it's something that that Andy Murray is a lot more. He wears his heart on his sleeve, and you see the emotions going through him a lot more. Whereas with Federer, I know it's a different sport, but it's the same principle. He just seems to be able to put whatever happened previously behind him and then just do some amazing things.
And now it's time for David to get up on the soapbox and give us a little rant and rave about something that's got his goat this week. So over to you, Dave.
very common question that we get to the show from people desperate to play is this idea that they want just one chance. They want just one chance to become a professional cricketer or to join an academy or just one chance to take the next step. But really, it's not about having one chance. It's not about doing one thing. It's not like you suddenly come across a coach who can give you one perfect tip and all of a sudden you become a professional cricketer. It's about putting in a lot of hard work over a long period. And some people forget that if you want to be a better cricketer, it's a lot simpler than you think it is. You just need to practice and play cricket as much as you can. And sometimes people sit back and wait and hope and wait for the perfect moment and their chance slips away. But you can do it. It is possible to succeed, even if you're a late starter. But you just need to have that passion to drive through and work hard when everyone else has gone home. Okay, so that's just about all we've got time for on the show this week. Before we go, we've got a little bit of housekeeping to do. We've got the competition winner for this week, and the winner of the competition gets a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Gareth, which one did you prefer this week?
I thought that, again, they're really both really good questions. It's great to get questions in from our youngsters that are listening to the show. But I would say Abhishek's question was a really good one, because as much as his one was about dealing with milestones and getting wickets and having to deal with expectation, the same principle and the same process applies to dealing with a bad shot or a wide ball or an O ball or whatever the case may be as well. So I think Abhishek's question touched a lot of bases there, which was good. So he wins it this week.
Congratulations, Abhishek. And if you want to send in your question to us, you can do so on our telephone number, which is 0208 816 7691, unless you're calling from somewhere else in the world. And if you head over to pitchvision.com, you can find our international phone numbers on the page there. You can email us on coach@pitchvision.com, and you can get us on Twitter, PV Cricket Coach, and Facebook, which is where we've got our tail ender from this week, by the way. So,
good.
Thanks to Simon Jones for that. Our Facebook is facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. If you want to subscribe to the show, you can do so in iTunes. Just do a search for Pitch Vision Academy and you'll find us there. And if you don't want to use iTunes, head over to pitchvision.com/academy, click on the podcast link, and you'll find all the details there. So, for everyone who's listened right to the end, we have two tail enders for you, as I mentioned before. Yeah, Simon Jones came up the goods on our Facebook page, Pitch Vision Academy there. And he's got two. One which is buzzers. You got that one?
Yeah, I've got that one.
Yeah,
okay. That's overthrows, that one.
Overthrows, well, I hadn't heard that one before. So that's
Buzzers, you've not heard that?
Yeah. No.
When the ball goes past the keeper or and goes through for overthrows, that's a pretty... I don't know, obviously doesn't get to your neck of the woods, but it's one that's been around the cricket I've played for a number of years.
No, it's the thing from the sidelines is a lot more boring. It's something like run up or something like that whenever the ball sort of trickles.
Right, yeah. No, buzzers.
Yeah, and both batsmen do that funny looking startled rabbit look.
Yes.
And then head down, go for it. And then he's had a western.
Yeah. Well, that's only up the road from me, so I know all about that one.
You know all about that one, yeah, which is Western Supermare. For those international listeners who have never heard of Western Supermare, it's just up the road from Gareth. That's all you need to know. It's a place.
Yeah, it's a seaside town. Seaside town, yeah, on the West Coast.
That's right. And, of course, Mare, which is a shortening of Nightmare, not playing very well. So if you had what happened to us the other week, which is our team were bowled out for 36.
Oh!
Yeah, you have a Western, yeah.
That is a Western, mate.
I discussed that on last week's show, Gareth, so...
Yeah. You could have done with a few buzzers in that to get your score up a bit.
Yeah, anything really, you know. A no ball would have improved. Yeah,
absolutely. Is that Simon Jones from Hampshire?
I don't think it's that one. No, I don't think it's the former
Coaches Association. No, I didn't think he was the England guy. It's the Hampshire Coaches Association, Simon Jones, I think, that sent those in.
Oh, possibly. Mm. I'll have to Facebook stalk him and have a look.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that's all for this week. So until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, mate.